Arabs.
You know the resilience of the Palestinian people. We will not leave our land. This is our land. This is our right. This was very clear from our people in Gaza. They prefer to live, you know, on their destroyed houses rather than to live outside of Gaza.
Some at the demonstration said an increasing number of people in Italy are choosing to stand with the Palestinians despite the mainstream media coverage of the conflict being completely biased in favor of Israel.
I have stopped following the Western media outlets for quite some time. They should be ashamed. We have the right to be informed honestly and truthfully. Give us the truth, and citizens will then choose which side to stand for. I'm disgusted. These media are all complicit in the mass slaughtering of Palestinians.
Hundreds of demonstrations in solidarity with Palestine have been held in cities and towns across Italy since the start of the war in Gaza over 8 weeks ago. Pro-Palestine rallies were held in Forlì, Ravenna, Cremona, Asti, Reggio Emilia, Genoa and Piacenza last weekend alone. Max Civili, Rome.
Scholars and thinkers have come together in a meeting at Tehran University to review a 2015 letter sent by Iran's leader to the youth in Europe and the United States. The meeting discussed how the leader's vision is finally being materialized in 2023. In the letter written in January of 2015, Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei asked young people in the U.S. and Europe to attain first-hand knowledge of Islam. Ayatollah Khamenei asked youngsters not to allow the states to hypocritically introduce their own recruited terrorists as representatives of Islam. He also points out that with the mass development of social media, people can go beyond their geographical borders and try to view different cultures and religions objectively. Such pieces of advice from the leader have once again been brought to attention as the youth around the globe are showing interest in Islam after witnessing the resistance and faith of the Palestinian people in the face of the Israeli aggression against the besieged Gaza Strip.
Instead of money and materialistic possessions, the youth in Western nations can grab onto a more soothing and inclusive philosophy by forming affiliations with Islam.
Some other scholars call the leader's letter a fatherly address, aiming to uproot the xenophobia that oppressive states usually spread in a bid to justify their violence towards the people of a certain land or ethnicity.
The fact is that these letters were seeds that was put on the ground for it to grow and to sort of bring liberation and knowledge and awareness and awakening right across the world, especially with the children, with the youngsters, and youngsters in particular because they are the future. The fact of the matter is that what has happened in the last month and a half since 7th of October reinforced and indeed brought into practice what the letter was trying to achieve. The awakening of people about the fact that Palestinians are the most oppressed and being deliberately massacred in front of our eyes, day in, day out.
Since October 7th, various Western media outlets have tried to justify Israeli crimes in Gaza. Accordingly, they have largely attempted to ignore the vast distress brought upon the 2.3 million people in Gaza in recent weeks. Young people, however, have been taking to the streets in support of Palestine in large numbers after finding out about Israeli atrocities through social media.
One of the main goals behind the letter by the leader of the Islamic Revolution to the Western youth was to bypass Western media that do not present facts to their audience, society, as well as young people in Europe and the United States. Sama Kujuri, Tehran.
Pro-Palestinian protesters filled the streets of the Yemeni capital to praise the success of the Palestinian resistance movement and condemn the Israeli regime. Protesters hailed resistance efforts, which they say delivered a humiliating defeat to the Israeli army. Yemenis said they will continue to fight alongside the Palestinians until victory.
We tell the Zionists and the Americans that the Yemeni people who just came out of an eight-year battle and a strangling blockade, that we have put all this aside and are stepping forward to stand with our Palestinian brothers and the Palestinian cause, because it is our main cause. We tell the Palestinians, you are not alone.
The demonstration also praised the Yemeni army's resilience in taking meaningful military actions, which pressured the Israeli regime to accept a ceasefire. Yemeni operations consisted of launching a series of drone and ballistic missiles to occupied Palestine, and the latest capture of the Israeli-linked ship in the Red Sea.
We will close Bab al-Mandeb and we will seize the Israeli and American ships until they stop the aggression on our Palestinian brothers and the resistance in Gaza. We will strike with missiles and the drones. Our missiles will even target the Zionists inside Gaza so that we can abolish the Israeli entity.
We are here to support our armed forces and the naval and air force and all of their military efforts, including the striking of a U.S. spy drone. We also praise the latest operation which captured an Israeli ship in the Red Sea. This was a huge blow to the Zionists.
Despite the announcement of a ceasefire agreement in Palestine, the Yemeni army says it will continue its monitoring of the Red Sea to prevent or capture any ships linked to the Israeli regime.
The Palestinian resistance has praised the Yemeni army's stance in supporting Palestinians and for taking decisive military actions against the Israeli regime. The Yemeni armed forces spokesperson has also reiterated that attacks against the Israeli entity will continue until the genocide ends. Yusuf Baudi, Sana'a.
In a remarkable display of unity and solidarity, the Palestine Freedom March took place in the heart of Lahore, just a few miles from the U.S. consulate. The proximity of the march to the U.S. consulate added significance to it, as the rally sought to convey message not only to the international community, but specifically to the United States, a key supporter of Israel in the war on Gaza.
Israel ek fascist.
The whole world now understands that Israel is a fascist regime that has occupied Palestinian territories. Israel sheds the blood of Palestinians to continue its existence in the world. The Israeli policy of oppression has been defeated now. These worldwide protests indicate that the concept of peace has won and the narrative of oppressors has been defeated.
The convergence of the people from different backgrounds symbolized a shared commitment to the Palestinian cause, underscoring the gravity of the situation in the besieged Gaza Strip.
People around the world, including Pakistanis, are on the streets and condemning the U.S. and its illegitimate child Israel for their actions in Gaza. Due to increasing public resentment, the U.S. and Israel are under tremendous public pressure, and the real face of the Zionist regime has been exposed in the international community. No oppressor can resist this public pressure anymore.
The event not only highlighted the immediate concern for Gaza, but also exemplified the broader call for justice and peace in the region.
The Palestine issue is a matter of honor for the Muslim community now. The events of Karbala are being repeated in Gaza. They are killing men, women, and children, considering Palestinians to be alone. But Israel and the U.S. should not forget that they are not alone. The whole of humanity stands with the people of Palestine.
United in their demand for peace and justice, the participants of Palestine Freedom March fervently called for a lasting ceasefire in Gaza.
The ongoing protest rallies, boycott of pro-Israeli products, and systematic fundraising initiatives are the examples of how deeply the Pakistani society is committed to helping Palestinian people who are confronting Israeli aggression in Gaza. Nasik Azmi, Lahore.
group of Italian journalists, representatives of media unions and organizations, gathered at the Roman Press Association in Rome to discuss how the ongoing conflict in the Gaza Strip has been biasedly covered by the media so far. The initiative was organized by the No Gag Network, a group that advocates for freedom of expression in Italy, as Palestinian and international journalists trapped in the coastal territory continue to be slaughtered by the Israeli occupation forces.
As of today, we don't know if these journalists have been executed or they have been killed in their homes together with their beloved ones during the Israeli bombardments. And I ask you, would that make any difference? It is horrific anyway.
During the meeting, journalists agreed that a war needs field reporting, condemning Israel's refusal to heed calls to allow independent reporters to access Gaza for direct testimony. Since October 9, the 2.3 million residents of Gaza have been experiencing a devastating near-complete communications blackout.
Killing a journalist is a war crime, and we call on the International Criminal Court to proceed with the examination into what's happening in Gaza.
The Italian journalists also relaunched a petition already signed by 200 French, Palestinian and Lebanese journalists demanding access to Gaza and the protection of journalists covering the Israeli onslaught on the Strip.
La libertà d'informazione viene seppellita sotto le macerie.
Freedom of expression has been buried under Gaza's rubble. Only journalists embedded with the IOF are in Gaza, operating under the observation of Israeli commanders in the field.
Speaking of freedom of expression, the future of journalism in Italy looks bleak. There has been a big question mark over the credibility of Italian media outlets in recent years, as the sharp divide between the mainstream media and a large chunk of public opinion has been growing deeper.
The divide is getting deeper and deeper. Much of the public opinion does not follow mainstream TVs and newspapers anymore. They have totally lost trust in them. And it is understandable. The media keeps saying the conflict in Gaza started on October 7.
Meanwhile, Italy's Foreign Minister Antonio Tajani has urged Israel to use the 4-day ceasefire in Gaza to carefully consider what the international perception is of its offensive against the Strip. Max Civili, Rome.
In the limelight.
Another war or military entanglement in the West Asia region will not only complicate America's geopolitical calculus, but could undermine its stranglehold on the region and beyond. Regarding this issue, we have taken a look at world media websites and news agencies for further details. Stay tuned for more. Middle East Eye wrote, since its inception, one of the Zionist regime's major imperatives as an aggressive and expansionist state has been to secure the support and patronage of a strong international power. Britain initially played this role with the Balfour Declaration in 1917 and during its mandate over Palestine. It empowered and facilitated significant numbers of European Jewish communities to invade and settle in Palestine, take over Palestinian lands militarily, and expel most of the indigenous Arab population from their villages, towns, and cities in 1948. Over the next two decades, the Zionist regime relied primarily on Western countries such as Britain, France, Germany, and the United States for arms, funds, and political support. This backing included the 1956 three-party invasion of Egypt with Britain and France, German reparations and U.S. weapons and political protection. During the last half century, the relationship between the U.S. and the Zionist regime evolved from Washington being Tel Aviv's enabler and protector to being a strategic partner. The U.S. has become the principal provider of the most advanced military equipment and economic aid and has given the Zionist regime a steady political cover, including 46 vetoes in the United Nations Security Council since 1973. Every president since Richard Nixon, 10 of them, cast vetoes during their tenure. The Zionist regime has received more than $260 billion from the U.S. since 1971, in addition to many more billions given by private institutions and Israeli bonds. Since October 7, Palestinian resistance attack against the Zionist regime's military bases and settlements, the U.S. has repeatedly endorsed Israel's brutal attacks on Gaza, which has resulted in thousands of civilian victims at a rate of 150 children killed per day and total destruction of Gaza's infrastructure. More than 8,300 Palestinians have been killed and 22,000 injured so far, and more than 2,000 have gone missing. More than two-thirds have been children, women, and the elderly. During this mayhem and genocidal war, the U.S. regime has continued to lend its blind support to the fabricated regime of Israel, arguing that it has the right to defend itself, with no regard for international humanitarian laws and conventions. In addition, American media outlets and politicians, including President Joe Biden, have peddled Israeli lies without any evidence, like the debunked stories of decapitated babies, rapes, and the attempted extermination of the Zionist Jews. After the Zionist regime's bombing of the Baptist Hospital in Gaza, which killed 471 people, they repeated the well-worn Israeli lie of blaming Palestinians, despite the overwhelming evidence showing the Zionist regime's culpability. For three decades, the U.S. regime has presented itself as an honest broker trying to reach political settlement in this conflict based on the so-called two-state solution. Yet, it's incontestable among observers and analysts that throughout this entire period, the U.S. has fully backed Israeli regime policies to dispossess the Palestinians and deny them their legitimate rights or even the minimum required for a political settlement. In the response to recent events, the U.S. and its European allies have deliberately ignored the context in which the attacks took place. In 2023, Netanyahu's extremist partners Itamar Ben-Gvir and Bezalel Smotrich were empowered to carry out their plans in the West Bank. Smotrich, who infamously declared that Palestinians don't exist, has already expedited Israeli settlement construction, seeking to double the settler population in the occupied territories to 1 million people. Extremist and Zionist settlers further accelerated the raids and invasion of Al-Aqsa Mosque compound this year, threatening to impose tighter entry restrictions on Palestinians. In the 3 weeks prior to October 7, Zionist regime incursion into Al-Aqsa became an almost daily event, punctuated by aggressive behavior and insults. In the first 9 months of this year, the Ben-Gvir-led security forces in the West Bank targeted Palestinian activists for assassination. They stormed refugee camps and villages, killing almost 200 Palestinians, including 27 children. Meanwhile, more than 5,500 Palestinian prisoners are being held under harsh conditions in the Zionist regime's jails. This year, the extremist government took away the few rights the prisoners gained over decades of a struggle. Among these prisoners are 1,860 people currently held in arbitrary detention without charges. Since October 7, well over 1,000 Palestinians have been arrested across the West Bank, in addition to the more than 100 killed. Compounding these long-standing injustices is the suffocating siege imposed on Gaza over the last 16 years without any relief in sight. While it was ignoring all of these provocations, the U.S. regime continued to pay lip service to supporting a vague two-state solution. Against this backdrop, Palestinian resistance groups saw no other option but to launch their 7th October operation. Their stated goals were to force an end to the desecration of Al-Aqsa Mosque, stop Israeli regime military incursions into the West Bank towns and cities that have killed hundreds, drive a prisoner exchange, lift the siege on Gaza, and send a strong message to the world that there would be no peace or normalization at the expense of Palestinian rights. Palestinian surprise attack shattered the myth of invincibility of the Israeli regime army and the superiority of its intelligence services. It shook the Zionist regime's political and military class to its core and fractured its society. In their unrelenting support, Western leaders have been trying to boost Israeli sagging morale. During the last 2 weeks, they provided the Zionist regime with a seemingly unlimited supply of weapons to pursue its ruthless war on Gaza. They enabled its policy of collective punishment of Palestinians, half of whom are children. Within days, the U.S. administration submitted a request to Congress for $14.3 billion in aid to improve the Zionist regime's slumping economy. It also dispatched naval ships, aircraft carriers, and advanced weapon systems, and even arms and troops to Jordan. Biden himself flew to Tel Aviv to personally declare his enthusiastic support and even accidentally posted on Instagram a photo of himself shaking hands with members of the U.S. Delta Force deployed there. The U.S. regime has since expressed its shared goal with the Zionist regime to eliminate the military capabilities of Hamas, Islamic Jihad, and other resistance movements in Gaza. It has callously defended collective punishment by seeking to inflict tremendous violence on Palestinians to turn them against Hamas and permanently end the group's rule in Gaza. However, the U.S. knows too well that such grand objectives entail great risks and peril. Its experiences and losses in Vietnam, Somalia, Afghanistan, and Iraq are just a few examples of the dangers of allowing a full-scale ground invasion against an indigenous resistance. If the U.S. directly joins the Zionist regime in its war against the Palestinians or their allies, it would be very difficult to contain a wider regional war that could spread to other countries and ultimately undermine U.S. interest. The Zionist regime's horrific bombing of Gaza has infuriated millions worldwide, particularly in the Arab and Islamic world, threatening a global backlash against Western countries, especially the United States. The U.S. full backing of Israel's genocidal war and ethnic cleansing of Gaza could be the final blow to the American-led global order. Its resources are spread thin, and U.S. politicians may no longer continue providing a blank check to Ukraine to fight its war with Russia. Yet another blatant display of American hypocrisy and double standards or invest in containing China's rise in East and Southeast Asia, a real peer competitor to U.S. global power around the world.
Option for today and a better tomorrow. IRIB English Radio. Our internet address is parstoday.ir/en.
Now from Ontario, Canada.
Now back to our story.
What is it in there?
We will be talking about this.
Let me bring in Leo Sazdi. He's a professor of international.
The Spotlight.
To the Operation Al-Aqsa Flood, many things were shattered. One was Israel's so-called invincibility on the military front. The other, which Iran's leader has pointed out too, is the U.S. plan for the region, which fell apart due to the operation. Well, in this edition of the Spotlight, we will look at the different schemes that the U.S. had, like backing Israel when it came to the Palestinian issue, or the plans it had to take over Syria, or helping Israel defeat Lebanon, all of which have failed. First, let me introduce our guest for this edition of the program. Rick Sterling, investigative journalist, joins us from Walnut Creek, California. And Brett Jonkers, historian and journalist, joins us from Hasselt over in Belgium. Welcome to you both. Rick Sterling, let me first start with you. We're looking at the statements that Iran's leader has made, and in the overall scheme of things, pointing to the American agenda in the region, of which he has said that the Operation Al-Aqsa Flood actually disrupted U.S. policies. First of all, do you agree or not? And second of all, which U.S. policies do you think that at least ranks in the highest when it comes to the statements made there by Iran's leader?
Well, so far we haven't seen many policy changes from the Biden administration, unfortunately. But what I think is very true is that the public perception of Israel and the Middle East generally is undergoing big changes. Previously, there was across-the-board support for Israel, and that has fallen dramatically. One description is it has cratered. Just a couple of weeks ago, two-thirds of the American public was calling for a ceasefire. And yet, in Congress, only 11% of congressional representatives are supporting a ceasefire, and in the Senate, only 3 out of 100 are supporting a ceasefire. And the Biden administration, of course, has largely gone along. It's it made some suggestions to Netanyahu, but it's been largely devoid of calling for any substantial change. So I think
can I just jump in quickly here and ask you a quick question? When Biden doesn't agree to a ceasefire, does that mean he wants the war to continue?
Effectively, yes. What we're seeing is the continuing influence of the Israel lobby, but that is undergoing a big change now. We know in 1967, during the Six-Day War, one of the effects of that was to build up this mythology of Israeli security and military dominance, and that won it a lot of support, especially among the Jewish population in the United States. What we've seen since October 7 is that that mythology has exploded, and we're seeing a lot of Jewish Americans who are now ashamed of Israel, and especially among the youth, there's a lot of activism. It's been a sea change in the public perception.
All right, this public perception, Brent Yonkers, is something that perhaps many, as our guest there said, maybe many were not aware of or were not educated enough or did not have the knowledge when it came to the conflict between Israel and Palestine, which brings me to another statement made by Iran's leader, that what has happened in the last 50 days or so is what Israel has done in the last 75 years, where it has violated Palestinian rights, settlements, he said, for example, as one example, he said, which they have killed anyone standing up to them, including women and children. Do you think that was part of the driving force then, based on the explanation given there by the Iran's leader, where many have come out supporting Palestine?
Well, I think indeed we see a much wider support base nowadays in the West, I mean, in particular, a much wider support base for Palestine than has been the case in the past decades. As an activist for the Palestinian cause myself, it has always been very frustrating to see the immense power and influence that the Zionist lobby and just the Zionist influencers, Zionist politicians have on decision-making in Europe and in North America. Now, the influence on decision-making has not really changed much at all, because this happens behind the scenes and at the top echelons of society. But we see that in these societies, in the West, the pressure from the bottom layers of society, the pressure from the streets, from the people themselves, has exploded far beyond what has been thought possible, I think, up until just a few months ago, because of the sheer cruelty and brutality of the Zionist entity, and of course the fact that media has now a far wider potential to break through the mainstream media monopoly than it had before. Nowadays, if you want to see what is going on in Gaza, you just have to go on on social media, you just have to go online, and you can find, you know, the confirmed and vetted reports and images even of the massacres being committed by the Zionist entity. The mainstream media might not show it, but people know where to find it, and people are enraged by it. And so that's why you see this increase, not just increased support for a ceasefire and increased support for, you know, the stop the bombing in Gaza, but an increased support for the Palestinian cause in general, because people start to research, people start to investigate. That is exactly the reason why so many Western governments have gotten so worried about banning the slogan "From the River to the Sea, Palestine will be free," because this was the slogan that was chanted by thousands, hundreds of thousands of people across Europe, not just across the world where you expect it, but also by the people in countries like Germany and France and the United Kingdom and the United States, where, you know, anti-Zionist activism was very difficult to organize up until recently. So Hamas has, and not just Hamas, but the resistance in general, has won a significant victory in terms of the popular support and the popular framing and the popular understanding of the Palestinian liberation struggle.
Well, I'm very curious. I'm stuck on Rick Sterling, the fact that he said many Jewish Americans, I think you said, are ashamed of being Jewish. I think that's what you said. I'm wondering to what degree is that evidence, and how you have either reached that conclusion or read it, or maybe you're seeing it, or maybe you heard it from other people, how that has come about for you to make that claim right now.
Yeah, one clarification. No, I didn't say that they're ashamed of being Jewish. They're proud of being Jewish, but they're ashamed of Israel and ashamed of Zionism.
Okay, I'm sorry about that.
And they're coming out and really underscoring the difference between Judaism and Zionism, which, of course, is a fundamental difference. The conflict is not over religion or ethnicity. It's over land and justice. So I think that's an important change, and I do believe that there's growing numbers of people across the board. Of course, the Arab community in the United States is very, very significant and large, and they have been incredibly mobilized, as well as the young Jewish population. We had an action here in Oakland, California. That was primarily organized by young Jewish activists. 700 people blockaded the Oakland Federal Building, with 600 of them being arrested. This was unprecedented. So there's a sea change happening in that regard.
Okay. Well, if there's a sea change happening in that regard, Brett Yonkers, what about the fact that you have the U.S. enabling Israel by providing the weapons to commit the war crimes that basically we witnessed the genocide unfolding on our screens, which then brought out people such as, for example, Jewish Americans, to then be ashamed of Israel? Shouldn't then the U.S. also be looked in that vein?
Well, yeah, definitely. And I think a lot of people within the rising Palestine solidarity movement and the campaigns tied to it are understanding that as well. Of course, we have to bear in mind that at the end of the day, the Zionist entity is a relatively small country when it comes to, or entity when it comes to territory, even when it comes to population. They at this point, they only house about half of the entire population of Jewish people in the world. So we're talking about, I believe, 7 million Israeli Jews, which it's a little bit ironic considering the fact that they consider themselves to be the quote-unquote Jewish homeland for all Jews to go there. But we have to understand, and I think a lot of people understand that nowadays, that this is all part of a greater cabal, for the lack of a better terminology, because they are connected. It is all connected to the military-industrial complex of the United States. It is connected to a very specific sort of death cult situation that is happening among some evangelical Christians, as they call themselves, which is dubious, within the United States. It is connected to the oil industry. It's connected to the power, to the military command structure of the United States itself. And it's connected to the wider geopolitical interests of the West. I mean, we have to always bear in mind that the early Zionists, including Theodor Herzl, the founder of the ideology himself, they were always very keen on pointing out the fact that the Zionist venture was a colonialist venture that was aimed, amongst other things, to bring a quote-unquote civilized Western society into the, again, quote-unquote barbaric East. This is part and parcel of Zionism from the very beginning. Without Western support, without the support of the United States in particular, but also of NATO in general, of the UK, of the European Union, without all this support, the entity of Israel would collapse practically overnight. Probably, they will probably fight tooth and nail to defend what they have conquered and what they have captured. But without Western support, this will falter, and that is why you see a lot of this. Palestine solidarity movements are aimed not just at protesting against Israel, but against taking practical steps to support, to end all support for Israel. And this can take very concrete measures, such as trying to stop arms shipments, which has happened, I believe, in Italy and in Spain, not quite recently. But even things that are, let's say, a bit more wider away, further away from the military part, such as here in Belgium, where the most important university, there is a significant movement now that is asking for the complete cessation of all collaboration between Belgian universities and the academic world of Israel, just to further isolate it in the way that has been done back in the 1980s sure. with the apartheid regime in South Africa.
This is The Spotlight. The Spotlight takes an in-depth look at the headlines, featuring interviews with well-known guests from diverse backgrounds to get to the bottom of the story. You can listen to The Spotlight every day on IRIB English Radio.
Well, we need to also talk about the plans that the U.S. had when it comes to West Asia, some call it the Middle East. But before we get to that, I have to ask you this, Rick Sterling, because this has made some news. The U.S. actress and activist Cynthia Nixon going on a hunger strike, along with what apparently are some other activists and also state legislators in front of the White House. She is very well aware of what is happening to the Gazans. Now, this is not to highlight her, but to highlight what she's saying. But in addition to that, when you have she's one of many actors and actresses that have come out, does the U.S. president and the White House realize, do they realize the type of support worldwide that Palestine has gained and how tainted the image of Israel has become? And I use this as one example. Do you think that this has rattled their cages or not?
I don't think they fully realize it, but they definitely partially realize it because the protests have been taking place all over North America. You had the Canadian Prime Minister Trudeau, who was basically disrupted from a restaurant dinner he was having in Vancouver by activists. You've got President Biden was in the San Francisco Bay Area a week ago, a protester shut down the Bay Bridge, which is a major transit point for probably half a million drivers every day. They shut it down for 4 hours. You had a traffic jam that lasted, that went for 10 or 20 miles. So they are definitely aware of it, and I think the individual efforts that people that celebrities are doing is part of it, but it's the mass action primarily around the world, and including in the United States and including in New York and elsewhere.
This notion of the Middle East or West Asia, as we call it, Brett Yonkers, that Iran's leader has said that the Operation Al-Aqsa Flood actually, in a sense, ruined the plans that the U.S. has had for the wider region. Well, we can see what it has had done when it comes to supporting Israel vis-a-vis the Palestinian cause. But we're looking at other aspects here. In one of his statements, it mentioned Syria, it mentioned Yemen, it mentioned the plans that it had in that regard, and also Lebanon, I should say, not Yemen, Lebanon, regarding Hezbollah, standing up to the force as one of the leading resistance groups. Do you think that the U.S. Has an interest after being defeated in these areas to continue with what it's doing and the participation it has in West Asia?
I think there is definitely a continuation of this imperialist interest in the West Asian region, and unfortunately, the leadership, the leading echelons of American society, they live in an ivory tower in a way in which they listen to their own geopolitical analysts, they listen to their economists, they listen to the war hawks, they think about how they can further increase the reach of U.S. empire, rather than look at the facts on the ground necessarily, and rather than being able to really grasp the reality as it exists. However, we have seen that the United States, when really push comes to shove and when they are forced to reckon with the facts as they present themselves, that they will be forced to sometimes make humiliating retreats, such as happened in Afghanistan. This has been the longest war in U.S. history, took them 20 years, countless of trillions of dollars. It costed, of course, hundreds of thousands of lives, unfortunately, mostly on the Afghan side. But in the end, the Americans withdrew, ignominiously so. Like, it was started to look like the retreat from Vietnam back in the day. It was chaotic and it was absolutely humiliating for them, but they had to do it, and they knew when they had to come to the realization that retreat was the only option. I think that's why you see there is a clash coming, or already happening, brewing between the different factions within the elites. Joe Biden represents the old school, let's say, of American imperial policy. That's why he wants to basically bring America back to the way in which it was, let's say, as a leader within a unipolar world order. That's what his goal was. But Joe Biden is, I think, one of the last representatives of a dying breed of U.S. politicians and more realistic politicians who realize that there's something has to change. They are trying to pivot U.S. policies in a different direction. Donald Trump, for all his flaws, was one of the politicians who was trying to pivot away from the constant imperialist meddling and constant invasions everywhere. So it's going to be very interesting to see, of course, how the 2024 elections will go and which faction within the U.S. elite is going to power. But I think for West Asia in particular, it is probably going to be beneficial, even if only because the United States has more to fear nowadays from countries such as China and Russia, and will probably try to dedicate more attention in the Pacific region as a result.
Well, one of the things that has stood in the minds of at least Palestinian leadership, and also the minds of many, is when the Prime Minister Netanyahu, Rick Sterling, picked, and he loves his props at the UN, we must say, when he picked up that piece of cardboard, another piece of cardboard, where the country of Palestine was not on it. We had the Palestinian Foreign Minister in the UN Security Council meeting today talk about that. We had the Riyadh, PA ambassador to the UN also make reference to that. So that is something that is standing out. This is part of the project of the new Middle East, I think, in the context of maybe Israel with the backing of the U.S. Do you think that this is something that Israel and the U.S. actively pursue together? Or is it an Israeli plan where the U.S. backs Israel on that, given the fact that Netanyahu presented it in the informal manner that he did? Are we talking about two different scenarios here, which both spell out a new Middle East in their words?
I think they're failing on both counts. The U.S. and Israel are pretty much joined at the hip. But I think Israel is seeing, the more far-sighted people are going to be seeing, that the U.S. is in decline, the empire is in decline, and, you know, there may be big changes in Israel. Hopefully they'll come to realize that there has to be dramatic change. I mean, in the United States, there's an influential columnist at the New York Times named Thomas Friedman, and he's been saying that he's been cautioning ever since, you know, after October 7th, that Israel has to accept a two-state solution. They have to stop the settlements in the West Bank and so forth. Obviously, that's not happening under a Netanyahu administration. And as we know, Israel is extremely divided. And Netanyahu is if he loses his position right now, he may go to prison. Israel is in a state of crisis, and the U.S. is in a state of decline. We can see all over the world. I mean, they failed in the effort to topple the government in Damascus. They have the agreement between the reconciliation, to the extent that exists between Saudi Arabia and Iran, is extremely important. China being the broker of that. So I think people throughout West Asia are seeing that the U.S. is in decline. Their power and influence is on the wane, and they're going to be acting accordingly. And this Al-Aqsa flood is going to be seen, I think, in history as an important milestone, as a tipping point in that process.
So I'm going to save the last question for you, Brent Yonkers. Isn't it ironic that when we have seen what has unfolded in the Gaza carnage, in this genocidal war that Israel has conducted, that has been backed by the U.S. Militarily, especially, maybe even in terms of the war scenarios, that Iran has been at the forefront of the Palestinian cause since the days of Imam Khomeini, who made it a priority to realize the Palestinian situation, that is now considered, Iran that is, for the U.S., to be somewhat of an enemy, where Iran has been sounding the alarm all this time.
Yeah, this is an ironic development, and it goes to show that there is a significant fear of the influence that the Iranian Islamic Revolution of 1979 had on the wider region, because whenever there's talk about Palestine or about any form of resistance in the wider West Asia region, for that matter, just think of Lebanon, Syria, and Yemen as well, for example, or the Western media, mainstream media, always point fingers at Iran immediately, as if Iran is like, they like to portray Iran as a counter-US, as if Iran has a sort of imperial ambition within the wider West Asia region, which of course is not true. But the reason why they like doing this is because the 1979 revolution has had reverberation in the wider area in order to increase the resilience and resistance, in this case, for example, of the Palestinian people. I mean, movements like the Islamic Jihad movement and Hamas itself only pop up after, of course, the reverberations of the Islamic Revolution were felt in the area.
All right, sorry to interrupt you. We're just fresh out of time, but thank you so much. Brent Jonkers, historian and journalist from Hasselt, Belgium, and from Walnut Creek, California, Rick Sterling. Thank you. Pleasure for your input, investigative journalist. With that, we come to an end for this edition of The Spotlight from Mikhail Batavoy and the team. It's goodbye.
This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran.